How long does it go for?
GCED, June 28th.
Do you want to call, call?
They're working for the first couple weeks. They work at Barn. And then one of them's going away to do a theater thing for 2 weeks.
Cool.
And I think the little one is doing a theater camp for 2 weeks.
You have one
last one? 13. Well, she is. She's this small. Yeah. You know, and then we'll go away for a week. They'll stay another week, and then there's just 2 weeks left of the summer.
Exactly.
It's over.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad I don't have to play those summers anymore.
When you've got the other cameras off?
Yeah.
Okay. Good afternoon, Westchester. It is 1:46. And this is a joint meeting between the Committee on Housing Planning and Operations and the Committee on Generations,
Generations
Cultural and Economic Diversity. Thank you very much. I now turn the gavel over to Chairwoman Sprecher to call her committee to order.
I'd like to call my committee to order. Bill Burton is on my committee. Elfrieda Williams, Sheila Marquette, and myself. Okay, so I call my meeting to order.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman. The discussion point today is entirely about universal design. And at our last meeting, we asked the Commissioner of Planning to provide us with his take on the different versions of the total bills that we had before, not with a commentary, but to provide us with a new draft legislation. And as of Friday afternoon, we received a version which is in your packet, member, as Rev 4. Is that correct? Did I get that right? Okay. I don't see Commissioner Burroughs here, but I do see Mr. Roros from the County Executive's Office. You would join us, Mr. Roros, and Tom Gardner, our attorney, who presumably has something to do with this as well. Thank you very much if you join us. Is Commissioner Burroughs not going to join us?
No, I think he is. I know he was at some function that I was at, but is he? He's coming. Right? Yeah, he'll be here.
Okay, fine. If for the television audience, you can identify yourselves, please.
George Oros, Chief of Staff to County Executive.
And Tom Gardner from the County Law Department.
Okay, thank you very much. And thank you very much for getting this back to us on Friday. I've circulated this all to the members of the committee, and I know members have a number of questions. But if you could step through this, because this is the first time we've actually had a full document. It's all of 2 pages long, so it's not a big thing. But if you could step us through the points that this document covers, this act covers, just so that we're all on the same page for description purposes. And Tom, I don't know whether that would be you or whether it would be George. I'd expect the commissioner actually to do it, but who's going to...
Mr. Chair, if we could just specify which version we're going to. I see at least two in front of me.
Rev 4, 6, 24, 11.
All right, thank you.
That's it.
For those of you scoring at home and in the audience, that's it. I hope everybody's got that.
Thank you.
We're working on the act. Okay. Mr. Roros.
Well, I think what was put into here was an understanding of a percentage. We used 15% of the units, and just so you understand how that 15% came about, it dovetails to the housing settlement, which requires that out of the 750 units, no more than 125 can be for senior, set aside for seniors. So. And the only other thing that I think is different, the descriptions of what universal design is remain as they were in all the previous alliterations.
Iterations.
Or alliterations.
Well, if you're rhyming, if it's a rhyming bill, it'll be the first time.
That would be a rhyme.
And the only other thing in here was that was put in at the request of the administration was a sunset clause, which also dovetails to the end of the housing settlement. That's for two reasons. One is to measure, because there is no way of measuring what the need and the market is for universally designed units. And the feeling is that at the end of a period of time, the county could look, and if there is more of a need, we would change the percentage to a higher percentage. If there was less of a need, we'd either leave it where it is or bring it down.
Okay. Am I correct then in stating that the criteria that begin on the bottom of page 1, accessible entrance and route, and continue on page 2, universal design features, which are then subdivided into accessible route within unit, accessible bathroom, accessible kitchens, and accessible receptacles and control, which had been in one verbal form or the other, are now something that the administration is prepared to support, and that's why it was drafted the way it is?
Well, I think we were always prepared to support this. The question was, how, with what magnitude and how many units that we would say this is appropriate. Mm-hmm. That's really, I don't think there's ever been any question, ever since Bernice first talked about this, and she talked to the county executive about it some time ago, we said, yeah, just a question of, applying it all across the board would impact not only the housing settlement, but any efforts we make to build affordable housing, because it increases the cost. And subsequent to that, we've learned, and I think the committee got a copy of a letter from one of the advocates or developers of affordable housing indicating some of the problems with marketing these types of units. So it was just a question of degrees, I think, not of supporting the concept of universal design. Mm-hmm.
And it is, Mr. Gardner, this is a version of the legislation that you worked on with Commissioner Burroughs, and it's pretty much come together with all the things that we had discussed before. Is that correct?
I think there are certain features that may be lacking that were discussed at one point or another, but I think it's the core of what the committee had discussed, pegging most of the standards to the existing ANSI 2003 standard.
Okay, let's go around the table. We'll start with Mr. Harper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions. One, last time, Commissioner Burroughs was quite clear that he needed the exemptions spelled out very clearly, and I'm not seeing exemptions in the new draft. Is that something that by choice was taken out, or?
Listen, we could go, again, it's hard to make a hard and fast rule. I think what we try to do is make this simpler. This is 15% of all. So, the topography thing, I think you still have a clause in here that allows him good cause but not limited to, but we didn't make it a specific. If you remember, one of the versions had that all of those were
right,
off the table
right.
Completely. This is saying no, because, again, you might have a situation, and I had this conversation with the commissioner myself, where you do have a building on a slope. Norma brought in some of those drawings, but you could, depending how you construct the unit, you could have somebody that enters on a bottom floor where you might not be able to do the universal design, but you could have another unit that backsides that where it's higher, where you come in and you actually enter on a first floor or a second floor without a garage. So, I don't think you can do too cookie cutter here, and I think what we're just trying to do is get to a point where we can, get this concept, which I think unanimously we agree is an important thing to do. The question is a matter of degrees and making it fit with what we've got to do under our housing stipulation and to keep the cost down for the taxpayer and to meet the real market need.
All right, well, the second point goes to that issue of cost, because when we first started this discussion and we had the presentation from AARP, those costs were presented as really being very minimal. And I think if we have a few moments at some point in this discussion, we might want to briefly revisit some of those numbers, because I think it's just important that those be on the record so we know what we're talking about.
Well, if I may, I'd suggest you also bring in the people who build these units and ask them about the cost. That letter from Mr. Roberts, I think somewhere along the way, the people that build the affordable housing, market the affordable housing, have to be part of this process as well, because they've certainly gotten our ear. And I think they've gotten near some of you over the last week or so.
Okay. Well, Mr. Alvarado.
No, no, I mean, you're learning from the process. At this point, I think universal design is something that time is calling for, and that anybody can find themselves needing to get by a particular apartment at any moment. But you don't necessarily want to be the neighbor to occupy one of these apartments.
Mrs. Beckman.
The young lady that handed out a letter in the back of the room there, very nice letter, I appreciate your letter. Could I just ask you, you had a section in this letter exactly of how much it's going to cost a unit, right? Where did you get your information?
Yeah, I got some of the statistics from the National Association of Home Builders. I've also spoken with some construction contractors who dealt with Universal Design Construction. David Sadowski is one of the architects I spoke with. I didn't include all the information here. This is just sort of a snapshot to present a case that it is cost effective. It's much more expensive to retrofit an existing unit than it is to build it, incorporate Universal Design elements up front. I think if a contractor knows, then they can bring and cite the area to suit the Universal Design features. So that's just one of the sources that I got that stuff.
Do you think that if we had another meeting, you could ask some of these people to come in here and talk to us about that? Because I'm very, very interested, okay? I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, okay, I was instrumental in starting this Universal Design. I wanted it to happen, okay? I happened to be chairing at that time senior citizens and disabled people, okay, who I feel are the ones that benefit, you know, everybody does. You never know, like young people who have multiple sclerosis, disabilities, and, you know, want to move in there. My question is, how many of them are willing to come here, and how many units we can afford to do? I do, you know, I'm ready, but I'm not going to, I know I can only spend what I have. I know what this DSAG case costs. I know there are 750 units. I know we have $51 million, okay? I just do not, I mean, if we have enough money, fine. But at this juncture of the game, with the economy the way it is, okay, and people not being able to, well, today I heard houses went up a little bit, okay, but I just see so many people unemployed, so many people begging me and asking me, people that made $80,000 and $100,000 working for $30,000 and $40,000. It's a tough time. I do not want to bite off more than I can chew. I do not want to put something in there that I'm going to have to raise the taxes for when we can't even get the services that we need in most of our communities now, okay? So I just want to be sure, and I'd like to speak to some of these people about the cost of this.
And that's an outreach to some of the sources?
Yes, and you can contact with Rose. Rose is my secretary, okay? And, you know, we'd like to know about it, and I'll contact Bill. Thank you.
I'm easy.
You're easy, okay.
Ms. Williams.
Well, I'm just concerned that we may be cutting off our noses to spite our face in terms of construction, universal construction, because it seems to me that we're not only dealing with seniors and the currently disabled, but we've got a lot of younger people who are becoming more and more disabled, and
right.
Every night you read in the newspapers about the fact that everyone in this country is so terribly overweight, which is adding to diabetic problems, and there are all kinds of other issues. And I'm concerned that 15% seems hardly enough. And what happens if a non-disabled individual moves into a regular department, becomes disabled, they have to move out and wait or look for another apartment? And how do you manage that? It seems to me would be a very cumbersome process to have somebody have to wait until something became available, probably, and then with only 15%, and then be moved out of that apartment. So it seems to me that if there is a percentage, it should be, I would like for it to be 100%, but if it isn't that, I would like for it to be at least 75%. It seems to me that everyone can benefit from having wider hallways and all the other things that are addressed in the AARP.
Okay. I understand what you're saying. The 15% can be negotiable. There's no, you know, set thing on that. But I would like to see, I don't know if we have it in this paper, that in back of all the walls, okay, of every apartment, that you can, like you said, if somebody gets disabled, open up the wall and give them a bathtub if they only have a shower. Every apartment should have that, okay? And access, because that doesn't cost that much money, and that's a very important thing that I feel. So, you know, I would like to see that, you know, as part of it too. And as you said, I'm walking around now with a cane, with a brace on my foot and everything else. I do have the diabetes that you're talking about, and I have problems. If I don't get my husband, if he's in the back there, to get a steady, I have to walk up 16 stairs to my garden apartment, and I need one of those chairlifts, okay? Otherwise, I have to move out. You hear that, Mr. Spreckman? Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Marcotte.
Thank you. I think we're all in favor of universal design to some degree. I don't think anyone at this table is going to argue that. I do have some concerns with regard to the 15%. I have heard from some people with regard to, you know, the building costs associated with it, the marketing of it. Are they going to be able to sell 100% of their units if they're all designated universal design? Excuse me. So I think the 15% is something we can seriously look at, tweak it if need be. I don't know in which direction. I mean, 20% might be a fair number, 15% might be okay. I think that we need to hear from those people. And I don't know if this committee has done that, brought them into that degree. No. You know, we do it with every other issue. We bring in people on all sides, but I do think we need, you know, the grab bars. I think it's fair to say most contractors do that anyway. Certainly in apartments, the hallways have to be a certain footage. So a lot of these things are done already. So
all those points are in the legislation.
Yes, yeah, so I'm aware. I'm just saying. I think we need to bring contractors in who built these units and see what they have to say.
Well, they're all here.
And maybe
so
they're
going to
say,
the issue?
Maybe they're going to say, this is great. We can work with this, and mm-hmm. that's fine. But I think we need to hear it from them also. But I am definitely in favor of universal design. You know, Jose hit the nail on the head. Any one of us, you know, tomorrow could find ourselves, God forbid, in that situation. You know, you just don't know what's in store for any of us. So, and no one wants to have to move. So, I think what we can do to make, you know, that situation easier to some extent, certainly it's incumbent upon us to explore it. But I think we also need to be fair to the entire market as a whole and sort of look at it. Those would be my comments, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Jenkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As one of the people that in 2009 sponsored this legislation, Ms. Spreckman, I would say a few things. One is that in respect to the percentages that as we had discussions around this table about the percentages don't work, right? They're not, because you don't know which time, place, et cetera. And as Chair Spreckman just mentioned, again, you know, if we design it in the beginning, young lady back there that just mentioned that part, when you design it in from the beginning is the absolute best thing to do. And when we heard from the contractors that came here, they said that the costs are minimal when you design it and you know that up front. The legislation takes that into consideration because the legislation says that things that are already in process, you know, this is not going to impact those. These are for things that are moving forward, and I believe the time frame was 6 months, 180 days, past the signing of this particular act. Again, no one is against universal design. The question gets to be, again, if there's costs. In this case, there are no costs, right? We're not giving extra money to the developers for providing fair and affordable housing or any of the money that we develop. The developer has a choice in this particular matter. If they do not want to abide by these particular parameters in the development of fair and affordable housing, and I'll get to the second point about, you know, what it should be for, as opposed to the 750 units, any dollars that the county controls on fair and affordable dollars, that needs to be part of it. And as long as we tell people up front, we're not pulling the wool over their eyes, we're not asking them to put extra money in, they design it that way, and I believe that in hearing from all of the different factions on this particular item, that it can be designed in such a way that it, A, is cost-effective for the developers, but more importantly, it is a life cycle opportunity for individuals, whether or not they are currently disabled, they're currently seniors, they hope to become seniors, the whole nine yards, that now we don't have to get involved in that. So the percentage item, I don't think is an item, Mr. Chairman, that makes sense in that. I heard what Mr. Oro suggested as it was tied into, the percentage number was tied into, and it makes sense for that, into the housing stipulation order. If we expand this as it was proposed initially to be impacting anything that we give our money to, right? Now, this is not requiring a municipality. It's not requiring an individual developer to spend a dime and to do this. But on money that we're putting in for fair and affordable housing for Westchester County, it only makes sense to design it in a way that anybody could use it at any time, right? So it doesn't make sense to do that. And again, it's not an option. And the developers, quite frankly, you know, and we know and we love a lot of our developers in the fair and affordable housing community. If we said this is the bar, they would meet it, right? They would, right? And they'll do things that they have to do to adjust it. So, Mr. Chairman, on that part, I would suggest that, you know, that we would go back to at least having a scenario where we have the percentages removed from the legislation.
Ken,
yeah.
Do you know that New York State now has pending laws up there, because I checked, and they have 25%. That is what New York State has, okay, and they'd like to see it passed. So that's the whole, you know,
right,
Democrats, Republicans, everybody.
And that law is not going to pass this year because they just closed their session. So, again, you know, Westchester County could continue to be a leader. And, again, we don't build 100% of the housing in Westchester County. The fair market housing is going to continue to be built and marketed the way that the folks need to do that. This is, again, if a developer is coming to Westchester County and asking to participate in these programs, and we're giving them our money, whether it's part of the $51 million or HIF or New Homes Land or any of those other things that we manage, you know what? That's part of the deal, right? No different, by the way, than it's part of the deal in the fair and affordable housing portion of if someone's using the CDBG dollars, that municipality has to give the county first right of first refusal on in-rem property. Right, but there's no gun to someone's head that says you have to do that. If you do that, if you accept the dollars, this is what comes along with it. You don't have to. But I think that this is the right thing to do because now we're taking care of the life cycle. Again, you know, and as you just said, Jose said, and Ms. Marcotte said, that you know we don't know when any of us are going to be in that situation, even for a temporary basis. And to spend the money to retrofit, because the law allows right now, all of us had this conversation before, the law allows for retrofitting to take place at the tenant's expense, or a tenant's expense in this case. That kind of thing is not acceptable. People, as you said, they're in difficult economic situations, especially if it's a health issue. People are already stressed out as it is. Now you got to have them looking for a new place to live. I think, again, you know, for us as a county, again, I don't believe anybody, the administration, any member of the board is opposed to doing this. And again, since it's not costing us, the county, any more money to deal with it, it doesn't make sense to leave that. That, and I, you know, if, and if I need a motion to do that, Mr. Chairman, I would move it down to the second.
Mr. Sure. Chair, Madam Chair, I'd like to address a couple of things that the Chairman mentioned. I'll say the most important point for last. First thing is, you know, the more mandates...
Could you speak up a little bit?
Yeah, sure. The more mandates...
The bars aren't showing up.
The more mandates and requirements you put on any types of things, whether it's affordable housing or bridge projects or anything, invariably drives up the cost. I think we've seen that. It's one of the reasons why when government builds something, it costs 30 to 40% more than when the private sector builds it. Secondly, the cost of retrofit, it's interesting because one of the things that Norma Drummond mentioned here at one of the meetings was that when someone purchases an affordable unit and they go to sell it, they get reimbursed by county tax dollars for any capital improvements they made for that project or on that dwelling. So if a family of three or two with young ones bought a universally designed building and decided that they didn't want the light switches and the knobs and all these things accessible to their children and changed all of that, when they later sold that unit, we would have to backfill that cost. So there is a cost for retrofitting, but it works both ways. The final thing about this not costing anything, it does cost something because it's the opportunity cost. If we're giving $1 million to build 10 units, that means the builder's building it at $100,000 per unit. That's what we're backfilling for. If the cost of that unit goes up 2% or 5% or 20% because of universal design, we give the same million, that's true, but now instead of getting the 10 units, we may only get 9 units. Which makes it harder for us to achieve the settlement, which many of you voted for, and which the prior administration imposed on this county, of getting these 750 units built by 2016. I'm sorry for that little editorial comment. I couldn't
George, it's expected, so go
ahead.
Mr. Chairman,
let Mr. Horace finish.
No, that's
okay. Okay.
So you've made 2 points. One,
I thought three. Okay.
Okay. The third one is the one. That you, I'm sorry, the second one, you suggested that a tenant who didn't like the universal design.
I don't think it's a tenant, I think it's an ownership. It's only an owner.
Would have the ability to tear it out and then be reimbursed for the expense of tearing something out?
According to what Norma Drummond said to me in a meeting and also said here at a public meeting. She made that.
That's
she
not
made
what
that.
I heard. We would reimburse somebody for making an alteration of a fundamental system that deteriorated the quality of the system.
I know that if new people came in and they didn't want that, you have to take it out.
The capital improvements, so people understand, the capital improvements on fair and affordable housing, if it was an ownership opportunity, when the person went to sell the unit, that the planning department goes out and inspects and determines whether or not that capital improvement would be paid for, right? So if somebody got a unit that and they did the kitchen over for whatever reason, right? Because it was an older place and they did that, they might be eligible for a portion of that reimbursement because they had to upgrade that. That wouldn't be about universal design, right? That if someone did that, and we have a law that says you're required to do universal design, that when that particular thing went in front of the planning department, and since the planning commissioner is the one that's responsible for implementing this act, if somebody decided they were going to take out the universally designed kitchen and put in a gourmet kitchen, they would not be reimbursed for that cost, right? Yeah. It's just that simple,
well,
right?
I don't know that it's that simple, and I think that you know, if you want, I'll try to get Norma in here, but
we already understand some of this, Mr. Rosa, certainly because we've been around this table, and you as a member have been around this table, when we were in lawsuits against individuals for selling units outside of the process, and that they tried to get back money for capital improvements that they made on a property basically they flipped that they shouldn't have been involved in the first place. And we said to them, no, you will not be allowed to do that. And they went to court and they lost, right? But those folks they're still going to try to do that. As far as the building, you know, when government builds, government's not building any of this stuff. So, you know, while it's an editorial comment, let me make one too. We're not building anything, right? We're giving an opportunity for a developer to participate. And when it comes from the planning department presents to this board a range of the pricing that is being invested in it. It's $1 million. And Mr. Oros is absolutely correct. It could be 9 units instead of 10. But it would be at this table we would decide whether or not that was acceptable or not. And some of the units that we've done for fair and affordable housing right now, you know, some of us would assert that we've overspent on some of those in the effort to try to get it done. But you know what? That's a decision we make jointly. The administration proposed it. The Board of Legislators accepted that. It is what it is.
So
right?
If you're willing to spend the same amount of money and get less units,
really not a big one back and forth thing here at this point. We got committee members who need to get something done, and we have a time constraint on our end. So, Ken, if you could finish up, please.
Exactly. The bottom line, again, for all of us from, you know, the building, the capital, and et cetera, those are decisions that we make no matter what it is for any project. We ask for this board to understand how much it would be the opportunity cost to move something from a LEEDS, entry-level LEEDS, silver to gold, et cetera, so we can make a decision on whatever capital projects it is, whether we want to invest more of the people's money of Westchester County to make sure that we're being more environmentally sound, and this is no different. I think that it's something that we have to continue to consider, that we don't know who, we don't know when, and we just want to make sure that if you're using our dollars, again, just the county's money on this, right, what money we control in the county, that you will apply these standards. And these standards are no different than building codes and all these other things that people have to apply to right now. They have to market to a certain group of people. They have to keep them affordable. They have to have a not-for-profit. You know what? To say that when you designed it up front, make sure it's designed that someone can sustain there and be there forever, I don't think is an issue.
Mr. Harkin, second round, and then I'd like to...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would... I just want to get on the record that I categorically deny this notion that we're going to get fewer units out of this. All right, this keeps going around and around. When I was president of AHOME, we built 12 senior units in Pound Ridge with county money, with New Homes land and with Homes funding. We planned to do 12. We did them all with Universal Design. Not only did we do them with Universal Design, we went further than that, we did the walk, roll, in showers because we knew it was senior housing. We built it all in. We planned on 12. We got 12. It was not a case where we wanted to do 12, and because we did universal design, we only got 11. So, you know, I for one legislator, I don't want to keep hearing that we're going to get less units out of this because my personal experience tells me otherwise. The other thing about percentages that I have problems with is that this is about equity or equality. You know, what are we saying to folks that if you're disabled, you're welcome in Westchester, but only in 15% of our housing? You know, or if you're a senior citizen who has trouble getting around, you're welcome in our housing, but in only 15% of it? I mean, we're supposed to be looking at furthering equality in Westchester. We're leaders at that. So, you know, I think 15% really is not going to give us the universal access and the life cycle care that we're looking for here. Now, I'm a pragmatist. I always have been on this board. And if we need to make a compromise, I'd be willing to discuss it. But it's got to be a heck of a lot higher than 15 or 25%.
And if I may, Mr. Chairman, When you look at the units that we're trying to affect and what 15% is, it's a talking. It's pretty much, and I'll bring it back home like I've always have. I bought a house with tall doors, this much width, and my family has grown. And I can see how constrained we able people are in that. As a matter of fact, when I had a sofa brought in, the guys that deliver it said, listen, sign here as a waiver that if that door breaks, it's not my fault. You know, and my wife wants to change that. It's been like 6 years since we moved in there. Says, and I told her, that sofa is not coming out while I'm here. So I'm stuck with an old sofa that I no longer want.
And I can't get it out. The bigger house you wanted.
Because we don't have universal design. On the other hand, this only pertains, this appears that we're affecting the whole world. We're only affecting, as eloquently mentioned by the chairman, what county building, county contribution to building affects. And we have, we're a county that leads by example. So looking at the percentage, 15%, it's really nothing. And again, as stated by the majority leader, I'm willing to compromise, but when you look at the percentage, what we're trying to do is just tokenism. And I disagree with whatever was agreed and the percentages that were on the desegregation case. We don't need to follow that basis. You know, we got, as a county, and I don't want to necessarily go there, we got into trouble for getting involved in housing when we shouldn't have. But getting involved in housing because we need it. There's not enough to go around. And as a county, as a vision, and this started way before, regardless of what administration, that we needed housing. We needed decent housing. We needed accessible housing. On the other hand, I go to my mom's, 122 South Broadway. And man, she switched five sofas since I switched mine. No problem. You know, and it's very comfortable and safe. It's amazing. So let's get something done, but not 15%.
Through the chair, to Mr. Huck, I just want to ask you a question, Pete.
Yeah.
According to the, you made a statement, well, I agree with you, you never know what's going to happen and who's going to need it, and what is out there looking to come in, you know, and depending upon where the units are, if handicapped people are going to have a hard time getting around because there's no transportation, there's nothing around there, you may be, you know, there's a lot of things to consider. My question to you is, according to the consent decree or whatever you have to have, you can have senior citizen or disabled people right away. You have to have family friendly 125 units. Then you could have the others. You can't have that. But
seniors, if I may respond, it doesn't mean that seniors cannot apply to live in those units.
They can,
you just can't market senior only housing.
That's what the
so what we're talking about is life cycle housing for everybody. So you can have a two bedroom apartment, but anybody can apply to live there. You just can't market it as senior only.
I thought that it said in the STIP, okay, that you have to have 125 units right away, family friendly, not senior citizens, and not
marketed to senior, not seniors exclusively.
Right.
But to say that no seniors could live here, that would be discrimination of its own kind.
A senior could apply for the units that we're doing. We just can't do for category B or C, which is the ones that you're talking about.
I'd like to get away from the discussion of the stipulation and stick with the business at hand. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just for Madam Chair, but it's important because the focus that people thought was about the stipulation order with the senior, and I understand that, and that makes more sense. But understanding now that that's not the case, you just can't market it that way.
Thank you. Ms. Williams.
It's not a
No, well, I think I indicated before, 15% of, if we're trying to get away from the stipulation agreement, but 750 houses, 15% would be approximately exactly 113. I think that number is entirely insignificant. I really do. I think that, and the other thing about the construction, we all know that in the construction industry, if something starts to become the thing to do, then the costs come down because more and more construction people are doing it. And I really have a problem with not constructing it in terms of universal universal design, especially as Bernice indicated, if you're going to deal with reinforcing the walls so that they can put handhold bars and all of that kind of thing. Yeah. That needs to be done at time of construction, not retrofitted afterwards when there would be a tremendous cost. So I'm in favor of eliminating the percentage, or if not eliminating it, upping it substantially.
Ms. Marcotte, last place.
No.
You can pass.
To Elfreda's point, I think, but much of that they already do. So I think sometimes we're mixing apples with oranges. But
I think if you put it, if you put it in the act, then we'll know that it's going to be done on an ongoing basis, and not some do it and some don't, and leave it to the construction industry. I think if we legislate it, it'll happen. Just like the municipalities have building codes that have to be adhered to. If you legislate it, that's the way it's going to be.
Ms. Marcotte, here.
I think that's already required under most building codes.
All right, I'm going to take the privilege of the chair to say a couple of things, and that is that while I am grateful for the efforts that have been made over the past several weeks to prepare this, what's turned out to be a very simple two-page act, and the draft that's come forward, I am not at all happy with the result. And begin with the 15% figure. The rationale for coming up with 15% is, in my mind, less than stunningly obvious. In fact, it has no basis in fact at all, except that it happens to be a number that's in the stipulation. I'm going to say this. You can rebut later. And in fact, there is no basis at all for a percentage, because we don't know what the percentage of is being applied to. We don't know why the percentage is being applied. And so I personally reject the 15% limitation unless it's going to be provided with a lot more backup than it's been. Secondly, I do not believe that this law should be applied only to housing that's constructed under the stipulation. I think that is absurd. We are either a county that's going to do this, or we're a county that's not going to do this. But to artificially, and again, without reason, apply this only to the stipulation is an example, it seems to me, to be to overload a factor that we all are very carefully concerned about, which is the cost of housing built under the stipulation, and disregard all the housing that's being built in Austining and Peekskill and Yonkers and Mount Vernon, where it seems to me that these principles ought also to apply. So I reject the premise of the act in that regard. And third, which we haven't discussed, and I think it's because it's embarrassing, that we have a sunset clause on this. And that the sunset is tied of all things to the stipulation, which again, has no meaning, is not presented with any logical basis, in fact, at all. And I therefore am going to take the prerogative of the chair to strike all of these matters and give you my version. And Debbie, if you would hand out to the public my version, and we're going to pass out a couple of copies.
We're going to pass out?
Or a copy.
I'm ready to do that.
I'm sorry, my voice may be a little scratchy, but you get the drift.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, this is not limited to the stipulation. It's for anything that is constructed with new homes money, fair and affordable housing fund, which is the stipulation, or housing implementation. So it's not limited to the 750 that are built under the settlement. That is true.
But I see the words Westchester County Housing.
That's one of the funds.
Yes.
That's why.
All right. I think that's a matter I'd like to clarify. Right, I have passed out to members, everyone around the table, and we have, we may have run out, but we have John didn't get one?
No.
My fault.
I made sure all the committee members got one.
Here we are. I think there's an extra one. I'm sorry. I thought I counted out the right number. Now, let me be clear about this. The committee report is basically the same, but has slightly different wording, and that can be discussed at a later point. However, If we go to the Act, page 1, dated 6/28/11, as you can see, the caption has been changed. The be it enacted portion is materially identical, well, materially virtually identical, except that I have struck the 15%. And it now says essentially that every unit built with subsidized money in this county, in ways that the county funds, shall be eligible and required to participate. The accessible features and the universal design features language is identical. It stresses the type B, which is the accepted version of this, and is therefore all-inclusive. If we then switch to the second page, section 2 is, I think, word for word. The good cause is a very important matter. We are not thinking that we'll just go willy-nilly out here and do this when costs may be affected. But until we have any sort of proof that this is the case, and a developer applies to the planning department for a waiver, only and then would we consider granting a waiver based on cost. It has to be based on cost, not on percentage. And I think that's just not anything that anyone would care to argue, should argue about. And the third thing is the sunset clause, which I simply propose we delete. I know I apologize for springing this on you because it arrived to me on Friday afternoon. I just gnawed on this over the weekend, and I was able to get staff to work on this with me yesterday to put it together. And you may shoot me down if you want. But I am proposing that we substitute at this meeting now my version of this for the revision 5, which we have in front of us, with what will be effectively revision 5, which is dated because I love putting dates on things and page numbers, which we haven't been doing. The version dated 6/28/11, and I am proposing that as a the entire basis for any further discussion. May I have a motion to that effect?
So moved for both committees.
Second by Legislator Jenkins on both discussion. Committees. Now, again, it's on discussion, not so much of the content of this, which is substantially identical with the deletions that I knocked out. But it's a free country. But I want to bring this forward. I take it your motion's for all purposes?
For all purposes, yes.
Okay, this is an act, which would then go before the Board of Legislators at its regular next meeting for discussion. Again, I apologize for the abruptness of this, but rather than go through it and line out things in a not so much contentious, but dreadfully boring way, I thought we'd just put the revised document in front of everyone. Members of the audience, so you've got this. I don't know that you may think this is the best way to do sausage, but this is what we do. Anyone on the table, you know, wish to say anything or praise, damnation, whatever, I'm here to take it all. Mr. Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, this addresses kind of what my comments were, but again, speaking as a pragmatist, so we don't necessarily have to go through the cycle of passing, vetoes, override, you know, all that stuff that goes along with making sausage. As I said, I would be interested in speaking about a compromise at a significant level up from 15%. And so what I would put out on the table is to Mr. Oros and to Madam Chair, who sponsored the 15%, you know, is this something that we can discuss?
Sure.
And you know, so we don't have to go through that whole cycle, you know, where we can work together on this is, you know, are you open to a serious discussion on this?
Yes.
Yes. I'm open to a discussion on this. I just would love to see us all do it before Bill retires and
Well, obviously he does too.
Before I need senior housing, thank you.
I would love.
Not too much, Mr. Testa.
I would love to see us work out something that we could all agree on, because it's a much needed thing. I proposed it for my committee. We worked together, and most of us were on the same committee, you know, except for you, Peter. And I'm happy to go over a couple of these things with you, but I still would like to, through the chair to Ken, do you have any idea, okay, how much a unit it would cost to put universal design in? About. Do you have any idea?
We got that information from the, one of the, Madam Chair, the real issue is that if we tell a developer ahead of time, and we give that, because we can't do this for anybody that's in the process now, it's just unfair, right? If we tell somebody 6 months from now, if you come up with a proposal and you want to use county money on it, you had to build in universal design, as Mr. Harcum suggested, they're going to do it, right? And they're going to come up with a number that's acceptable to us, because, quite frankly, if they come in with a number that's too high, we're going to say no. The administration's not even going to bring it down to us, right? And if they come up with something that they can't, they can't survive with, they're not going to do the project. So I don't think that, you know, having a number in mind, and that's why I don't think it's a difficult thing to say, all right, well, is it 75%? Is it 80%? Is it 2%? I think you just say, here's the design, and we gave the latitude in this legislation for the commissioner of planning to come forth and say that this particular project, because its specific needs, and this was in the original legislation, to come back and say, you know what, because of these set of circumstances, it doesn't make sense in this case, right, for good cause. I don't think we should have to blanket that. I'm really thinking that this particular option that was developed jointly, it sounds like, is a good option. It says design it in, and if there's a real problem, come to the table and talk to the Commissioner of Planning, and we'll discuss it then, right? And that leaves that there's no hard and fast percentage number, because I'm not quite sure how you do the 80%, 70%, or whatever numbers that people are talking about.
I'm talking about a price.
Because,
okay.
Well, with the developers that
can't... I know in 6 months from now, prices could go down and they can go up. I'm not asking you 6 months from now. Is it $7,000? Yes.
Number one, the cost in the early part of this discussion, in fact, your first meeting on this a year ago, we heard from AARP and the architect who was here that the costs are low. Secondly, what we did with AHOME, when we had to put some extra costs in, so maybe you use some less expensive plants in your landscaping. So your bottom line cost is still going to be the same if you've got universal design, and if you got to make up for it by using, you know, less elaborate sconces, maybe you do that. If you use, you know, a local rhododendron instead of something a little more exotic in your landscaping, you do that. The developer is still going to make their money. We're still going to get our units. You know, within these projects, which are multi-million dollar projects, you know, there's latitude to move within the budget line. So if you're adding, $1,000 in cost per unit, you know, you can make that up in other places in the budget. So it's not like we're going to be getting less units, because we built 12 of these units at AHOME. Our bottom line stayed the same.
That's not bothering me, less units. It's bothering me how much to put the things that we want in.
Bernice, it's just a lateral cost within the budget. That's what I'm telling you our experience was. If we had to spend a little bit more on the bathroom, because not only did we frame it in, we put the walk-in, roll-in showers in. So we found other areas in the budget to put in less expensive things. So the bottom line, the cost to build the project stayed exactly the same. That was my experience.
All right.
As a developer. As a developer?
When I was with AHOME, yeah.
As a developer.
Right.
Okay, fine. Well, anyone else? Ms. Markoff.
Okay, I read this just quickly. This is for, I'm not sure if I'm reading it right, is it for new construction? It says new residential housing.
Yes, it's the same legislation as we have been considering all the way along, which is to say new construction or substantial renovation.
Okay, it doesn't say that. That's my point.
But I'm saying it's what the programs are that we're dealing with in fair and affordable housing throughout this county all the time. It's those two categories. That's sort of a given. Okay.
Okay,
fine.
Can I touch?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought you were hesitating.
No,
you hesitated.
Because it doesn't say that.
Okay.
What it says, it basically any project that would be receiving, you know, monetary assistance from the county would have to adhere to these guidelines.
Right.
That multifamily dwellings. I mean, that would substantially increase the cost.
No.
No.
Why would it?
Multifamily dwelling. How would you put a no-step entry?
Well, that's why you have good costs. That's exactly why we have the good costs.
I'm sorry?
In other words, we give the commissioner the out, as we have in all the legislation.
Right, then, well, that's what I'm asking. Would there be
that's
exempt?
What's in there. That's what we discussed.
I didn't see it in here. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the commissioner has the power.
Absolutely has the power to say that.
I didn't see the exemption part in here.
Yes, Section 2, as I recall.
Yeah, Section 2 of page 2, or paragraph 2.
Then I do apologize.
Yeah, must state good cause. The commissioner of planning.
And that's the same as the legislation, basically, that we already have.
That we already did, yeah.
And they talk about
that.
Grades, topography, characteristics of the building design or layout.
And recognize, my response to you the last time, Ms. Markoff, the caption of the legislation does not discuss public dwellings at all. It says any unit, any housing supported by this county. Okay. You want to finish sight reading?
Is she finished?
I don't know.
Got it.
I think she's still working on it, so let's give her a chance.
No pressure.
I'm reading it.
All eyes on you, no pressure at all.
I'm kind of reading it.
You want to say something? Ms. Marquez, you could yield a couple minutes of your time to... Legislator Amarato has to go.
I have a commitment. Okay.
He has to go move a couch.
I appreciate you.
That's the one that's not moving.
He's going to move his mother's couch.
That one is easy.
Yeah.
Okay, yes, yeah, so your excuse. Right.
So moves, Jim. Well, we have a motion on the floor.
Yeah.
We do,
and that's the question. May I go around the eligible members of both committees to tell me whether or not you would like to conduct a vote at this point to put this on the floor of the Board of Legislators at the next meeting?
Well, I would say, I mean, we can do it one of two ways. We can vote, and then we have the all, and then we can, in leadership, have discussions on a compromise, or we can try and work out a compromise and then just vote out something that the administration's okay with, we're with, or at least if they're not, then we can at least say we tried, we had the conversation, and we voted through anyhow.
Mr. Chairman, in that sphere, what I would do is vote it out now, and then we would have the discussion, and certainly it's not going to hit the floor until July 11th. That gives us a lot of time to have that level of discussion, to see if that's the case. Because, the legislation, the way that it appears right now, I believe gives us the latitude and gives the Commissioner of Planning the latitude that would be necessary to make those modifications. And we're just saying plan it in that way from the very beginning. And now the costs, as you so eloquently say, Ms. Hawkham, are already included. And again, we still have a lot of time to be able to have discussions with the administration if there's some other number to come up with for this particular portion.
Right? Okay.
Can I finish my comment
please.
Then? Then what I would say is not only as one legislator, but as a majority leader, if we vote this out today, the door is open. Let's talk before the meeting, because I know a number of legislators have expressed an interest in compromise, and in leadership, I think we have a responsibility to try and make everyone as happy as possible. So if we vote this out today as majority leader, I say that we will have those conversations with the co-sponsor and with the administration.
As chairman of my committee, I want to thank you. I appreciate your trying to work together and all that. On voting on this, I'm just going to have to tell you,
I would like the compromise. I want to sit down with you. The way it is now, I'm going to have to walk it.
Right.
Okay? And then after we discuss it, and I hope it works out.
Okay.
It's wrong, wrong.
And just really quick, unfortunately, it's summertime. We can ignore it, and people have other plans and kids and stuff like that. And we cannot avoid the fact that we have both committees in motion at this point. I would like my presence here to count for something. Unfortunately, I was called in that I had to attend and adjusted my schedule. And I would also, out of respect to the chairwoman, I would want my signature, you know, without prejudice and with the hope that we could find a middle ground. But I at this point, Mr. Chairman, I don't think no more discussion should go on other than the vote on both on the motions.
Just a comment, Mr. Chair, thank you. Can I just ask that when we post this to the website, that we include what the Type B unit requirements are? So if someone is going to the website, reading the legislation,
we'll make sure that there is a link,
there should be a link
in all of the previous versions which is referred to Type B, but we must certainly make sure that there is a link to the appropriate standard that explains what Type B is. Yes. Yeah.
I mean, is it that extensive? It has to be a link, or can we scan it and attach it to the legislation?
Links are actually pretty easy to do. So, I'll check on that and make sure
we'll
that's
find
not
out
the easiest
way. We'll find out whether we can legally do it.
If I may, one other proviso, whether it's 15, 100, your thing, or something in between, it should be recognized this is going to have to go to the monitor before it can become law. Because we're
any legislation that impacts on this, my understanding, always has to be presented to the monitor for his comments, if not approval, as I understand. All right. I think Mr. Alvarado has made a point, and because he does have to leave, at this point I'm going to exercise the prerogative of the chair and ask for a vote. All those in favor of moving this forward theoretically to the floor of the board at the next meeting, but obviously in between we will do a lot of work, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? I'll accept the notions that people are going to
sign this
without prejudice.
Without prejudice.
Ms. Markoff.
No,
she's raising.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you also. Yes, yeah. All members at any time can vote in favor, but without prejudice.
All right, and then in the interim, the chair and I will sit with you and Madam Chair and the administration.
The instructions to the majority leader and the chairman are to work on this extensively with the administration. May I have a motion for purposes of both committees to close the meeting?
I think. Did you have a set of minutes, Mr. Chair?
We do, but I'm not sure anybody sat here and read them while we've been gaslighting on.
We did so move, Mr. Chair.
You did?
Absolutely.
Oh, all right, we'll second that.
Mr. Harkin, second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All in favor? Madam Chair?
Can I have a motion to close my meeting?
Do you have minutes, Madam Chair? You're okay?
Huh?
You have minutes, don't you? You do, Madam Chair. I will so move your minutes.
Oh, thank you.
Chairman Sped read them off.
Second.
Thank you.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Thanks.
Whoa. Both committees, we are adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hey, Jim.
How are you? Members, please stick around to sign.
Thank you. We'll talk at either end of this week or
here we go. Your charge.
Thank you.
No, don't feel crazy. It's just good. Thank you. Come on.
Wait, how many years have you been doing this? Right? 2009.
So
what time are you doing this?
3?
Okay.
Thank you.